The Guardian.
Underrepresented minorities are roughly 26% of the population of this country, but less than 5% of the science, engineering, and technology workforce. Women, 51 or greater percentage of the population, but less than 20% of the science STEM workforce. And it's well known in STEM that diversity of people leads to progress. And so for those two reasons, we need more people, more underrepresented minorities and women to become involved in technology. But there are problems that impede.
You're hearing the voice of James West, the inventor of the electronic microphone, from a TED Talk he gave back in 2015. One thing he highlighted was the need for more diversity in STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, fields that tend to be largely white and male. This week's episode is inspired by Black History Month, which is celebrated every February in the US and other countries around the world. We wanted to do something a bit different, so I invited my friend and colleague Shala Ramanan, who writes about video games and co-hosts the gaming podcast Argue the Toss, to help me present the show. Shala, thank you so much for getting up so early to join us in the studio. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Now, as a podcast presenter, I feel like I should have known that the electronic microphone was invented by a black man, James West, who we heard at the beginning of the episode. So what other black inventors of things we use all the time might people not know about?
Well, as you might expect, I didn't find that many black pioneers in tech. But there are a few significant figures. You've probably seen people in the game industry talk about Gerald Lawson, who invented the video game cartridge.
He forever changed the video game industry by creating the first game console that used replaceable cartridges, allowing games to be played separately. Before that, games were built into the console. This paved the way for the success of the groundbreaking Atari system and Nintendo, among others.
And I doubt many people know that a black man invented 3D glasses. His name is Kenneth J. Dunkley, and he was also a key figure in inventing holograms.
Oh,
I know. And also animators, web designers, and video game developers working in the 1990s may be familiar with the programming language Lingo, but they might not know that it was invented by black pioneer John Henry Thompson.
So these are great. They've all been men so far. Did you find any examples of black women inventors?
Well, it took some serious digging, but I found Marie Van Britten Brown, and she invented the first home security system in 1966, and that received an award from the National Science Committee in the US.
Wow, the 60s.
Yep.
I hadn't heard of any of those. So what about what's going on today then? Are there black people in tech right now that you think we should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I mean, black people and minorities in general are making huge strides in the tech industry, but they still face some challenges. For example, in today's show, we'll hear from a guy in Barbados who set up a tech company in the UK.
You only get that really exciting blue sky thinking when you get people to interact with situations and people that they haven't interacted with before.
We'll also hear the story of a young woman from London who rediscovered her childhood love of coding and decided to try and spread that love in quite a unique way.
With code, essentially, you can create music, you can create art. So that is something I really wanted to introduce to people, how innovative technology can be. And it's for anyone and everyone, no matter what background you're from.
Towards the end of the show, we'll hear from a man who set up an academy to teach young girls in Africa how to use their tech skills to the best of their ability. He'll also explain what the tech industry needs to do to become more inclusive.
Diversity isn't something that we kind of need to wrestle with and solve as a problem. Diversity is fundamental to getting the technology that we want in the world.
Sounds great. Let's get started. Welcome to Chips with Everything. I'm Jordan Erica Weber.
And I'm Shala Ramanan.
Let me find a room that is mom-proof. That's very hard, by the way. My mom is like an omnipresent.
Carlton Cummins is the co-founder of Acceleron Limited, a clean tech startup that is looking at the way we use and reuse lithium batteries.
Acceleron, while we're in the lithium-ion battery space with lots of other companies, while most companies are focused on developing new battery chemistries and new battery packs and new battery processes, Acceleron has been focused on what do you do with all of these batteries after. So we've been focused on doing two really important things: the process to collect and identify used batteries that are viable for reuse, and we've also been developing the technology to repackage and repurpose these used cells for other applications. To kind of make this very tangible, we transform used electric vehicle batteries into stationary energy storage for regions like Central America, where they do a lot of renewable energy. So that's one of the applications that we kind of transformed something from one application into something viable for another.
When did you first realize that you could repurpose batteries that were non-viable for one use for another?
Well, interestingly, the whole concept of reuse is something that I was used to, and I think most of us are used to from a child. I'm from the Game Boy era, and for me, I knew that when the AA batteries in my Game Boy were dead, I could actually take them and put them in a remote control for the TV, and they work just fine. I also knew that the batteries in the remote control, I could then take and put in a clock, a wall clock, and it would be just fine. And we kind of know these kind of things, that we can use one thing for something else.
Carlton, have you always been a techie kind of person? Did you always know that you were going to work in tech?
I've always been a tinkerer. And that's just a part of me. I like creating stuff. And this stuff transcends just tech. I think tech is my new exciting avenue for creating stuff. I actually started academically in art and design. I'm quintessentially an art student that got nerdy, I guess.
Carlton is from Barbados, but did his master's in the UK, which is where he founded Acceleron. I wondered if he found it difficult to get into the tech industry here in the UK.
Well, in general, whenever you're a minority in any space, it can be quite a challenge. And this is across whether you're ethnic minority, gender minority, it's all the same, which is why I tend to empathize a lot with women in the workplace that tend to have a lot of challenges, because me being an ethnic minority, I can understand, not entirely, but I can understand a lot of their struggles, because the similarities are the same. You essentially get people assuming what you can and can't do based on your predisposition, and that doesn't necessarily reflect your ability. So you have this thing where you always have to be challenging perceptions. If I kind of got very philosophical about it, the thing for me that's really important when it comes to being in the tech space for me is that I remember that I represent something. Even though it's not something I might have chosen, the reality is that we all represent something. So whether you're a woman in tech or a black minority in tech, you have to be conscious and cognizant of the fact that you are representing a larger body of people. It's not something you chose, but with that in mind, you tend to have to perform to a level that represents your group very well.
So, I mean, do you think enough is being done in tech specifically? And what difference do you think diversity makes to a tech organization? How does it benefit?
Well, in terms of whether enough is done specifically for minorities in tech, I think we've gone ahead in strides. I would never say enough has been done, because whenever you say enough has been done with anything, it encourages complacence. So I think there always needs to be more. There always needs to be encouragement of, inclusiveness. I think that's the word I would use. And the important reason for that is that ideas come from everywhere. I'm an island boy from a small country, and I've developed a battery company solving a problem that nobody else is addressing in the UK. Exciting things come from everywhere. You want to be a part of that. But the only way you can be a part of that is if you encourage inclusiveness, if you create means of isolation via institutional means, etc. You get a narrowing of thinking. That's another problem that you get. You only get that really exciting blue sky thinking when you get people to interact with situations and people that they haven't interacted with before. It causes a transition or a transcendence of thinking that wouldn't have occurred otherwise.
So Carlton is doing really well for himself as the founder of this exciting company. But what about people who are new to the industry?
So my name is Bukola Thompson. I'm a junior software engineer. I work for Honeybee Solutions, which is part of Dixon's Carphone, and I'm from London.
Okay, so it's interesting because you never really considered yourself a techie before, did you?
So it all really started on MySpace. So when I was roughly 14, 15, I used to make layouts for my friends just for fun. And when you implement a layout, you have to configure the HTML to make it work with the MySpace page. And back then, I didn't actually think I was essentially creating websites, web design, development. It was just something fun for me to do. So when MySpace died, I kind of left that side. I went on to university, studied psychology, went into sales for a while, but I didn't really enjoy it. I really wanted to be creative. So I started doing some research, went to visit a few workshops, came across coding workshops, and it just made me realize how much I actually loved coding, and it's something I used to do for fun, and now I can potentially make money out of it. So then I decided to quit my job in sales, take on a part-time job as a waitress whilst learning how to code. I did that for just over a year, and now I'm here working as a junior software engineer.
What is it about coding that you love so much?
I think that it's just so creative. So one thing I love about coding is the fact that you can literally translate your ideas into something tangible. Because I'm pretty sure with apps such as Airbnb and Uber, they're all just ideas in their heads, such as, I wish I could just press this button and then, I don't know, a car would appear. And these things are feasible with code, with technology. So that's something I'm really fascinated by.
And how did you teach yourself?
So I needed a lot of self-discipline because it wasn't easy working part-time and then doing that at the side. So there's a really cool company, actually, sorry, organization called CodeBar. And fun story, the first time I actually went with them, because what they essentially do is they pair you up with a senior developer. So then you learn how to code or you work on projects. And they have several different organizations that sponsor them with venues. So the first time I actually went to the workshops was actually here at The Guardian, 2016. So I used to go to these every week as well. And also having side projects really helped me apply what I've learned online into real life applications.
Awesome.
So what made you think of a link between coding and music? So you said coding is creative, which is something some people might not automatically think. Mm-hmm. So how did you make that connection?
So I organized an event called Code and Hip Hop because essentially what I wanted to do is let people know that I don't want them to get intimidated by lines of code. So the letters and the numbers, there's much more to it. I just didn't want people to dismiss that fact. And with code, essentially, you can create music, you can create art. So that is something I really wanted to introduce to people, how innovative technology can be. And it's for anyone and everyone, no matter what background you're from.
So can you tell us a bit more about coding hip hop, what it entailed?
Sure. So it all really started with a small tweet. I tweeted out saying that I really would like to have a night where we come in, code, chilling, and then listening to hip hop. And a lot of people were really interested in it. There was this foundation that reached out to me, they're called Creative Hustle. They really helped me in terms of mentoring me and funding the whole project. So they essentially helped me to get in touch with us too. They sponsored the venue. And then I went out to find a instructor who has experience with the whole live coding, and he was just so cool because, I don't know, it's just so different. Not a lot of people would put these two together, so that's something I really, really wanted to do. So I managed to get him on there. We looked at the lesson plan, how we could do it, sent out invitations through social media, made sure we got the food, the venue sorted. And then when people came, it just made me so happy because they were really excited. It was just so different from building normal websites. And it was just really well received. So that's something I really want to do more in the future.
Sounds amazing. So what was the response to the event?
So roughly 20 people came. And in terms of the feedback, they absolutely loved it. And they want more workshops. And also, I'm looking into creating more workshops where you can actually code websites, or just basically giving them the foundation on how to code. Because one thing I felt that was really difficult for me was the web development is such a broad field. There's just so much to it. And when you learn code, especially by yourself, it becomes really difficult and quite overwhelming. And it would have been nice for me to have someone there to guide me. So that's something I'm looking to do in the future, just equip them with the basics, the foundation on how everything works. So when they go off to do their own thing, they already know how to piece it all together.
So you're a Black woman who taught herself to code, and you were entering a space that's traditionally white and male. You know, how was that for you? Was it difficult? You know, what was your experience?
I wouldn't say it was difficult. So whilst I was learning how to code and whilst I was working as well, I saved up money and then I went on to a coding bootcamp, General Assembly, for 3 months. And even whilst I was there, I would probably say 10% of the people I was with were women and I was the only Black girl. So I felt like I got a little taster of what it was going to be like outside. And yeah, now working as a software engineer, I am the only Black woman in our tech team. And I wouldn't say it's difficult because I don't feel like it's holding me back. I would like to see more people like myself, especially in more senior positions, because I just feel like it's just more motivating for me and more realistic. But the way I am, I just know I just have to work hard and just get to where I want to be, regardless of whether there's somebody like me there.
Do you think there's anything that could have helped you when you were younger to feel more like coding was something for you?
Representation. If I had seen more people on TV, for example, because in media, when you look at, for example, Big Bang Theory, or you just have this stereotypical nerd character who's usually a white boy, he gets bullied by everyone, he's just stuck in his bedroom coding. That wasn't me. I couldn't relate to that. I'm a sociable person, I'm a girl, I'm Black. So that just never, ever resonated with me.
That point you made about Big Bang Theory really hit home.
Yeah, we've all met guys like that, but thankfully it's becoming an old-fashioned stereotype because of people like Bookie and Carlton. We'll hear from them again after the break to find out how they think we could solve some of the ongoing issues facing minorities in the tech industry.
Visible role models are extremely important.
We'll also hear from Tom Ilube, a Londoner who is trying to make coding and other STEM-related subjects more accessible for young women.
The thinking and the culture of the people that write the technology finds its way into the technology. We're almost hard-coding technology norms into the software.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome to The Start, a brand new weekly podcast from The Guardian.
Without those kind of engaging with reality, I will not become Ivory today.
Each episode reveals a story of artistic beginnings, as told by some of the great artists of our time.
For me, Scandalicious, so much of that was also about me finding my way.
Focusing on one piece, they share how these early moments of creativity shaped them, the influence it had on their subsequent work, and what the piece now means to them in retrospect.
The most I've ever seen in any room, you know, looking at any kind of art, was in Mr. Barnes's 2 rooms.
To find out more, head over to theguardian.com/podcasts or search The Start on your favourite podcast app.
And sometimes even the families will be saying, why are you going off in that direction? You know, your brother should be doing that. You should be doing something else. So it takes some real grit for a young woman to say, actually, you know what? I do want to be a petroleum engineer, a civil engineer, a computer scientist.
Welcome back to Chips with Everything. I'm Jordan Erica Weber.
And I'm Shala Ramanan. Before the break, we met Carlton Cummins, an entrepreneur from Barbados who overcame challenges to start a tech company in the UK.
We also heard from Bukola Thompson, a junior software engineer who taught herself to code and has organised events to encourage others to get involved. She said that while she personally hasn't encountered unexpected difficulties, she is still the only Black woman in her office.
So what is the tech industry doing to try and encourage more people from minority groups to pursue careers in the sector?
I'm Tom Ilube and I am the chair of the African Science Academy, and I build schools and I build technology companies.
Tom has been in the tech industry for 30 years. He found major success in financial tech working at the London Stock Exchange and Goldman Sachs. He was also one of the brains behind the UK's first ever online bank, Egg. But despite an already successful career, he wanted to move into education. So he set up the African Science Academy. He sat down with our producer, Danielle Stevens, to explain exactly what that is.
The African Science Academy is a school for girls in Ghana that accepts young women who want to be scientists, technologists, engineers from across Africa, brings them together into a very intense intellectual one-year program where they study maths, physics, computer science and so forth, and then they go on to great universities and great careers in science and technology. My father was Nigerian, my mother's British, but I grew up partly in Africa, partly in Uganda, partly in Nigeria. So I know the continent well, and I always wanted to do something in education in Africa, and that's what motivated me to get the Africa Science Academy set up.
What are the specific hurdles for girls in Africa who want to study science or technology or even pursue it as a career? And what part did this play in your decision to set up a school specifically for girls?
Yeah. So it can be difficult for young women who are interested in science and technology in Africa sometimes, and in fact, to be honest, across the world as well. Sometimes the harder sciences, the engineering, civil engineering, mechanical engineering, computer science, mathematics and so forth, are almost seen as male domains. And sometimes even the families will be saying, why are you going off in that direction? You know, your brother should be doing that. You should be doing something else. So it takes some real grit for a young woman to say, actually, you know what? I do want to be a petroleum engineer, a civil engineer, a computer scientist. And it can be hard. And therefore, we wanted to create an environment that really encouraged those young women to come. I don't know if you've seen the film Black Panther, but there's a character in there. So the Black Panther's sister is just a wonderful example of a young woman who has just completely embraced science and technology. So in a way, we're creating lots of her.
Lots of Black Panther's sister. Now, you said there's how many girls?
So we have 25 girls a year in the school. We get about 250 to 300 applications. So it's really 10 to 1 to pick the young women that we want in the school. And that in the building that we've got at the moment, that's as many as we can take because they have to board. It's a very intense program, so they have to be there the full time. We're going to expand the campus up to probably about 200 girls at a time when we're fully expanded.
Yeah. How do you pick these girls?
It's quite a process. So we start by going to schools and we say, have you got young women who are very strong in maths and interested in science and technology? And they put forward their candidates. Their candidates then have to sit an exam that we've set to see whether they're at the level that we're looking for, because we're looking for those girls who have something special in their ability to work with maths and physics. We then interview them. We then look at their backgrounds, because all our girls are on scholarships. They don't pay any fees. And we're looking for girls who come from less privileged backgrounds but have that innate ability and the drive to really do well in maths and science. So everyone gets interviewed, and then we end up having some really hard choices.
What happens with the girls who maybe don't have the ability yet but have the drive? Is there an avenue for them?
Yeah, so, you know, we can only do what we can do. So we're looking for girls who have both the ability and the drive. And as it turns out, there are more than we can handle. There are hundreds of them. So we can do just what we can do. I think girls who don't yet have the ability, that talent is emerging, but they have the drive. What we tend to say to them is, please keep applying. You know, if you didn't get in this year, we want to hear from you next year, and let's see whether you can get in next year.
And if we leave aside women and go more broader in our thinking, what needs to change globally in the tech industry in how we recruit for tech positions?
I think that the tech industry needs to really understand and accept that in order for technology to be fully expressed, to have its real impact, it has to draw upon diverse ideas, ways of thinking, cultural references, because otherwise you'll find that what happens is that the thinking and the culture of the people that write the technology finds its way into the technology. We're almost hard coding technology norms into the software. You know, everyone talks about artificial intelligence today and how what an impact it's going to have. With AI and with machine learning, I could write an algorithm and train my algorithm in a way that will behave consistent with my beliefs. I tell it to identify great doctors, it identifies great male doctors, because the way I've written the algorithm, the way I've trained it, almost subconsciously guides it in that direction. If other people aren't in the room, if black people, if women, if people from all sorts of diverse backgrounds are not in the room when these algorithms are being designed and trained, then we shouldn't be surprised if they end up exhibiting certain biases. And that will be a real problem for the tech industry. So I think if the tech industry really wants to realize the potential of the technology we're creating, it has to say, diversity isn't something that we kind of need to wrestle with and solve as a problem. Diversity is fundamental to getting the technology that we want in the world.
Both Carlton and Tom feel that bringing more diversity to tech companies will foster more creativity and therefore better ideas. So how do we encourage more diversity?
Visible role models are extremely important. A simple example is, as a child, your frame of everything is based on what you see, feel, hear, touch, especially what you see. And that's why most children, their parents tend to be their very first role models, because that's their first reference when it comes to how should I behave, what should I become. So as you grow up and you may be developing an interest in technology, you start to look around for people like you who've done it, because that becomes your frame of reference as to whether I can do it.
Everyone is just so focused on hiring, I guess, people of color, but they never really look at the culture and making them wanting to actually stay within the role. So again, that's something that needs to be looked at. So not just hiring, but also the culture of the company. Is this suitable for someone who is different from everyone else? Is this a place they would like to be? So my part in this mainly is just trying to inspire and let them know there's people like you and me that are working in this industry, so we can make it.
I'd like to thank Bukola Thompson, Carlton Cummins, and Tom Ilube for joining us this week. You can find a link to the African Science Academy and Acceleron in the description for this episode on the Guardian website. If you have any questions, queries, or feedback, get in touch via our email address, guardianchips@gmail.com. And please, let us know if you have any cool digital stories you think we should know about. I'm Jordan Erica Weber.
And I'm Shella Ramanan.
See you next time.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.